Welcome to The Squeal, PIC's Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. As we finish up our three-part series on pork quality, today's discussion gets to monetizing pork quality and the view from the meat case. Joining us is CEO of the American Meat Science Association, Colette Caster.
Colette Caster, meat scientist with C-Caster Solutions.
And PIC's Neil Matthews and Brandon Fields.
Neil Matthews, Applied Meat Science.
Brandon Fields, manager of Applied Meat Science.
Thankfully, we have an auditing system for many elements of our industry, and that was driven by the industry. It was also in response to consumer questions. And certainly in the last decade, we have heard more comments about pork quality from the consumers as they have had opportunity to experience this whole new wealth of cuts, of techniques related to NAE, no antibiotics ever, different elements that a consumer has requested. So now, as we think about pork quality and the auditing systems that are available out there, PIC has one with these two gentlemen that are sitting beside me, but when does it become a part of our standard as an industry?
I think, you know, usually the answer to that is when things get priced into the market. So pork is in an interesting place where some of our market signals indicate to us that we should be producing high quality lean at least cost. Some of our market signals indicate to us that we should produce a product with unique quality characteristics. So I think the genetic companies are always trying to find the balance for that, and that you'll even hear some of our customers kind of want both. Of course, everybody wants things that they don't always necessarily want to pay for. But I, you know, until we get a more clear and consistent market signal on pork quality, I think we'll have to continue to go at it the way that we have.
Comment.
Just to add something on what Colette said there, you know, it's one thing having the color and the pH and all of those things, but one of the ways that if I'm sitting in with a CEO of slaughter plant and talking about it, and the way it really grabs them, you got to think of it outside just the box of the meat quality. We're in a business of selling water, okay? Muscle's roughly 80% water. So the more of that water you lose out of there, it's the less pounds or kilograms you have going, you're selling out of that plant. So these processes we're talking about to improve the color and the pH and all of those things, we're also hoping to hold more water in there. So that's more pounds you're selling out the door. So there's a direct economical advantage to it aside from just selling high-end quality pork.
So PIC, you guys, you know, I go into a restaurant in Chicago and I see a particular breed on the menu. Obviously you have as well, different places you've gone. This indicates a particular quality, a particular eating experience. Utilizing this framework, is there any value in that breed-specific pork cut?
Breed is marketing, and I think that's
the
true.
Angus producers don't think so.
Well, when the CAB program requires 51% black hide and a grade, there's no actual guarantee of a breed. You know, I got some black Gelvies, and you might even get some black limousines, but I'm sure not going to grade many of those limousines as a prime steak. So when I talk breed, you know, Duroc gets a lot of hype currently. There's the Berkshire. Okay, I can still have very poor quality Berkshires and Durocs because either my genetic program isn't focusing on quality, so I didn't start right, or I mismanaged it somehow, somewhere in the process. So breed is zero guarantee of quality.
I think with a few exceptions. There are some very unimproved breeds Iberian pig in Spain. Chilling can be terrible, everything be terrible, and they'll still have high pH, good color. And it's just because, and Brandon and I talk about this, we don't really know the reason why, but we think it might be because of muscle fiber types and things like that. You know, they haven't bred these animals. They're cost a ton of money to raise them. They're very inefficient. They have a lot of fat on them. And they just really haven't improved that animal to be like what our traditional breed is now. I think with some of the Berkshire, not all Berkshires are Berkshires. I think some with a lot of the less improvement of them, I think that they're probably a little bit like the Iberian pigs as well.
So do you use, on your BLTs, do you use hybrid tomatoes or do you use heritage tomatoes?
I don't eat tomatoes.
Never mind. Same question. I mean, only it's a plant. It's a plant.
As long as it's red.
Okay, questions for each other. Comments.
Well, I think the, you know, one quality factor from a genetic standpoint that we haven't really covered, which kind of relates back to the consumer, is there is a lot more consumer acceptability for flavor and fat. And this is why we see cuts like ribs, butts, and bellies taking off. And so we really haven't talked about if there's an ideal marbling level in the loin or if we should be focused specifically on pH. So I wondered if Neil or Brandon wanted to address that.
I'll make a quick comment to that. I don't know if it'll come to exactly what you're coming at. But you talk about in the cuts like the butt of whether it's the pH or the fat. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, just talking about, you know, the increased consumer openness to fat in general.
Because used to it was they want it lean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, alternative cuts and all that kind of thing. So I thought maybe we would want to just spend a couple minutes talking about that too.
Okay. So what's contributing to that from a flavor and tenderness profile?
Or genetic.
You know, I go to places and they say they like to eat the butt or the shoulder in there, and probably that's one of the most popular muscles. Yeah. If you look worldwide, going up into that shoulder there, that part of the top part of the butt. And most of them say, well, I like to eat that because it's got a lot of fat in it.
Juicy.
Well, it's also one of the highest pHs in the whole pig as well. So which one is it? You know, it's usually very dark, high pH, good water holding. And I think that the fat in it probably does give some flavor component to it. But I think the pH is a big driver in that as well.
We're kind of in a tough place on that because we really like them to have lean burgers so that they'll buy our bacon to give it some flavor when they do that in the restaurant. And it is a challenge, isn't it? Once you take it down to the lean levels that have been requested, how do we return flavor to it other than with additives or...
But if you take a pork chop with a very high pH, it's going to have good flavor.
Sure.
Research out there that's shown that. You don't have to have the intramuscular fat to have the flavor in there.
And I think Brandon and I talked about what are those at the meat case, because I grilled you on that. What, you know, what at the meat case are you looking for when you go for that? And I think the consumer is learning as they go. In the old days, it was, well, I want less fat because I don't want to pay for fat. And now coming to find out that, well, that's a key component of flavor. I really, you know, he really likes it better or she really likes it better when we do steaks this way.
And we also have to, especially as a genetics company, you've got to look at the whole pig, right? We're marketing, we're eating the whole pig. And while we may get a premium for more marbling in the loin, because we can then export it easier to Japan or Korea or sell it to a chef at a fancy restaurant, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good in the ham.
It can be a detriment in a ham.
Exactly. It can actually be the detriment in the ham, especially when you're making 98% fat-free lunch meat and these type of things. So you can't select for marbling in one location and not the other. You know, fat is kind of inherent.
Equally apportioned.
It's equally distributed through back fat, marbling. It's all highly correlated. You really got to focus on where's the best overall combination. And when we look at this component of eating quality, and the relationship between pH and marbling and those things, a lot of the research has shown the vast majority of the consumers, if you've got 2% or more marbling, intramuscular fat, and you have an adequate pH level, they can't tell the difference between that 2% and 4 or 5%, which is very expensive to add to the pig, whether it's genetically or nutritionally. So when you keep that adequate level of marbling and you have the good pH, you're going to get the good eating quality. Compared to, I can have 8% marbling, but if I've got a really bad pH, you know, 5.5 or less, I'm still not going to have a good piece of meat. So that's kind of where we're working at from a genetic standpoint, satisfying the consumer's eating quality demands as well as the visual demands of some of the customers where they do want to see that 2 to 3% minimal marbling. And I think some of that also is where you get into, now we can talk different breeds because there is some difference in those levels of marbling within breed. So back to the individual company and their business plan, what is it you're trying to produce and sell and market and to whom? And where I get into to some debates with some of our customers, and hopefully I'm on the right and trying to make them realize if you're selling 10% of your product as ultra-high-end marbled product, you don't need 100% of the pigs coming into the plant to have that. In fact, I can probably select 10% randomly by going out on the line from what I have today. You know, if it's a higher volume, maybe you do need a select flow or two to fit that market niche. But again, I don't like to design 100% of my program to satisfy 30% of my market.
And just to add on top of that, if you take one line that says has intramuscular fat of 2.0% and you go to one with 3%, that doesn't mean they're all going to be threes. And those ones are all going to be twos. There's a wide distribution around that.
Exactly.
And there's very few of them that you can make a difference that big, nutrition being the same and so forth, between the genetics, unless you get into some of these weird off-breeds like the Iberian and some of the Berkshires and stuff like that. So you're shifting your population up, but you still have a lot of them that are below that threshold of 2%, even in the ones with 3% average marbling. So you have to think about the whole distribution of it. And, you know, and when you go to figuring the economics, like Brandon said, we're only 10% being sold at that high end and you're producing all your pigs at this cost, and then you figure the females are all going to be lower than the males, you know, and it's very difficult to get the economics to work out. Some locations in the world, they can do it.
Absolutely, some can.
They get a lot more margin on those products than we probably would here in the U.S. Just to add something on regarding that, and the flavor component and the added fat in there, there could be a negative flavor component depending on which fat's being added in there. If you're getting very soft fat added in, you can have a lot of rancidity in it, and it would be a very negative experience. So we have to think along those lines as well.
So Stump the Auditor, any questions for Colette?
So Colette, I'm just going to ask you if you agree or disagree with how Brandon and I, you know, position, you know, two of the most important components are the stress immediately before slaughter and chilling of the product. Do you see that as well?
Oh, I agree 100%. Because, I mean, honestly, you could stress a pig out pretty bad through the loading process and between transport and resting. You could essentially recover that pig to the same point, right? But you don't have the opportunity to correct those two issues. So I agree completely.
Okay, Colette, here's a question for you. When you go to the supermarket, how do you select your pork chop? Now I'll ask that from Brandon as well.
Okay. I choose the, I don't really want to use the word darkest, but the most, it's in the meat case, it's typically the darkest colored pork that has a reasonable amount of marbling. So, for example, if something was Steatosis Junior, I would not choose it. But I'm going to pick something that's got a good balance of color, texture, and a decent amount of marbling. And price. I'm price sensitive.
I'll answer basically the same way, although I'm not terribly price sensitive. If I want pork, I'm going to buy it. But that doesn't mean that if I walk into the store, which is rarely, but if I actually walked in and said, oh, that's an awful good price on pork loins, that I wouldn't buy one, not planning on it, and freeze it. But yeah, I'm looking for basically the darkest color, which should mean the highest pH, and then that adequate level of marbling. If there's a two color scores of four, between 4 and 5 laying there, and one has 2% marbling and one has 5% marbling, I might take the 5% marbling, but it's not a deal breaker either way.
What if you have a 2 color score with 5% marbling, or a 4 color score with 2%
marbling?
4 color
score. I don't care if the 4 color score is 1% marbling. I'm taking the 4 over the 2.
Yeah, ditto on that.
The other thing I look at is how much purge is in the package.
Look at the purge in the package. Marbling is probably 5%.
It's got really nasty texture.
So the color score is 80%.
Yeah.
The marbling is
20%. Because it may have real good color and not have good pH. So if you combine the color with how much purge is in there, you're going to get a better indication of the pH.
Do you know the texture without opening the package?
It's visual on the surface of the loin.
If it's holding a nice firm-looking surface versus an undulated surface and so forth.
Our guests for this pork quality conversation on The Squeal have been American Meat Science Association CEO Colette Caster and PIC's Neil Matthews and Brandon Fields. You're welcome to share these podcasts widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.